freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com. How are we doing today? Well, Monday Night Football last night, first week of NFL action, totally in the books now, Brock, which is good. We're on to week two.
Yeah, I love these days, man. I'll just say that. I love when the whole family's back together. We don't get enough of these days, right, where we're all in studio. We can all look at each other. Howdy's back from climbing Mount Rainier. Congratulations on that, Howdy. Way to go. I'm proud of you and all your effort to do that yesterday.
Thank you.
Yep, you betcha. And Lydia loves it more than anything. And I love that the whole week is done. And, you know, we're going to get soon here into bye weeks. You're going to get soon to see rosters that are depleted a little bit. This is the best shot, basically, that everybody's got going heading into the season. And I'll tell you what, if you're a Seahawks fan and you watch 16 of these games and you walk away this weekend and go, no chance. Seahawks got no chance. I feel really bad for you because I don't feel that way at all. I watched, you know, not all 16 of these games, but certainly enough of them to realize and just kind of further crystallize my belief that Chip Kelly also nailed down 2 weeks ago when he met with us. This is a league of incredible parity. You just don't run away from people. And I thought, other than the Lions last night with five turnovers.
Whoops.
And the Bills that are
Whoopsies.
A total disaster,
yeah.
There's 30 other teams, and even Detroit's going to win games. Other than Buffalo, there's 31 other teams. That, you know, any given Sunday, anything is going to happen. And I love that nature of this game. This isn't the Major League Baseball that I look at the standings and there's nine teams in the West that are just, or in the American League, that are just giving away the season. That just does not happen in the NFL. And to me, that was just the resounding theme of incredible parity over the weekend.
What did you think of last night? Because I think there's ways to kind of bring it back to the Seahawks. But what did you make of the two games last night?
I think the Rams are really fast. I mean, they do everything. That's the reason they didn't play a lot of their people in the preseason. They are, you know, is going to be as ahead of the curve as anybody to keep as fresh and healthy as possible. And those guys fly. I mean, they absolutely fly on offense, defense, and special teams.
And yet, I mean, I know they ended up sort of running away with it a little bit late. The Raiders gave away so many opportunities in that game. It's such a funny game, right? You're watching it. It's in Oakland, so that's a bit of a... That's a bit of an equalizer, right? I mean,
yes.
you're kicking off the ridiculous dirt infield. I mean, it's a complete joke show, and I understand why they're moving on one hand. On the other hand, the passion of that crowd, it seems ridiculous. Just complete. I mean, this isn't St. Louis where nobody showed up and nobody cared about the Rams, and you're like, I feel bad for St. Louis, but nobody really cared. Even when they were great, they never really had that passion. St. Louis is a baseball town, first and foremost. It's probably a hockey town second, and the idea of it being a football town just never really materialized. That's why they've lost two teams. Oakland is a football town. Those people are crazy, crazy for the Oakland Raiders. Even with Groot, I mean, like, they're obsessed. They're yeah. so into it. The crowd is so passionate, and the idea of stripping that team from that city
yes.
is complete insanity. But that's a side note.
So you know me pretty well, right? Can you imagine me? It's the only time I was in a stadium. You come out in a tunnel, right, and you're under their bleachers, and it felt like Gladiator. Like that in the movie Gladiator when Russell Crowe's like in the arena and you're like, oh my gosh, it's like shaking and people just want to kill you, right? And you just feel like you're just going to run out to the lions out there, right? So I come running out and for some reason I just wanted to fight the world. Like you could imagine what a
you
dork
did?
I was. Oh, yeah.
God, you're a dork.
In my start out there, you know, I started as a game that, you know, I got knocked out.
That was the game.
And nearly walked
Romo.
Out into the stadium
Romanowski.
Naked.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Romanowski was a Broncos
no,
at home. But
oh, okay.
I was just like, I want to fight you. And I was telling teammates, like, do you just want to fight? And they're like, look at me like, you are such a dorcas. No, I want to survive this place because you're right. It is a unique entity.
It
and
is.
With Chucky
and,
back,
and the idea of them
it
leaving is just
up.
Stupid. But I thought they hung really well with the Rams. I thought the Rams looked good, but not like this elite super team that couldn't possibly be beat. Unfortunately, Oakland dropped a couple of would-be interceptions. They threw a pick in the end zone. They threw a pick six. I mean, I just, you know, they found some ways to give it away. But I thought, I don't know, it didn't leave me with that feeling of there's no chance against the Rams this year. I'll tell you what else it made me think, and I can't be alone. Mm. Anytime you're watching this guy play, it's fun.
Lynch. Testing the middle.
and getting a push right through.
Marshawn just dragging people and throwing his helmet wild. I mean, is there a more violent, fun runner in the NFL? There just isn't. Like, I just won't get tired of watching him play.
I don't. Dude on the other side's pretty violent.
He is, but he's smooth, too. Marshawn's not smooth.
No.
Like, Gurley's awesome in his own way. Don't get me wrong. I'm not. Yeah. This is not a a shot at Todd Gurley. He's a great player. He's a better running back right now than Marshawn Lynch is right now.
Yes.
But there's just no one more fun than Marshawn.
Smooth. Kind of like Marshawn's pick. What was that picture?
The picture?
What was that? How have we never, ever seen that? You would think you would unearth everything imaginable with the Marshawn run here that he had in Seattle for all those years. And last night, they put out a picture that I think is the number one trending thing in the world this morning, and certainly in America and in the sports world, and the Ringer hitting on that as well. Was that really Marshawn? When was that Marshawn? Is there any way that you looked at that and thought that is a Marshawn Lynch? There's no chance.
Well, I mean, the dreads didn't start when he was a baby. There had to be a time before that.
The glasses.
You think he came out of the womb like that?
The glasses, the polo shirt.
Head of dreads? Huh?
Yeah. I like the idea of Marshawn popping out of the womb just like day one. Like, here I am. What's going on?
Beast mode.
I thought you was Charlie Pops.
Yeah, it's pretty.
He's just like 15 inches long. Right. That's how big he is.
Talking about the case of
he's like a little Penny.
Get me a case of Dillon.
Yeah. He's a full grown, but he's just a newborn.
Right. And so by the time he's in high school, like, he just still looks the same way.
That was preppy Marshawn.
Yeah.
That was preppy with a polo shirt and glasses, Marshawn. Totally clean cut.
I thought that was pretty good. I'll tell you what else I liked last night. I liked the broadcast. I thought your guy, Joe Testor, did a great job. He was really good on Monday Night Football. And Witten kind of didn't say much and was unobtrusive, which I guess was fine. And Booger McFarlane, as you mentioned, you thought I would like him a lot. And you were right. He was great.
Yeah, it is.
It was kind of a fun broadcast.
Yeah, the beauty of Joe is he makes everything. If he was on this radio show this morning, it would be the biggest radio show in the history of 710 Sports.
I don't think that's true.
He would make it feel that way. He loves it. Yes, if he were in studio with us.
Oh, in studio.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
fine. Maybe
if he were
studio.
Here. Then,
on a call.
On the call.
No.
That's
no.
Not really the way it's
if,
gone.
If you are
from
out.
East Lake Avenue.
Yes. I'm telling you, if you're sick and they come into town one day and he comes in and does a show, it would be the biggest event.
I could see that.
Because he loves it.
But he also doesn't. I didn't get the sense he was trying too hard.
No.
He doesn't have a sense that he's over trying and trying to make it seem big. Mm-mm. It just kind of like, who is it? A couple of the guys kind of like, is it Kevin Harlan? I'm forgetting exactly who it is. Who kind of like, they're really trying to make it seem big. And you're like, no. Yeah. That's not working. I mean, your guy who used to work with Carter, I mean, he does a good job of sort of understanding. He doesn't have that big voice, and he's just kind of doing a good job with the broadcast. But I thought Joe was a really good choice.
And he just loves it. And he just, it's his dream come true, man, to be on Monday Night Football. And injecting that kind of energy into it was pretty cool. The Rams are going to be good. The Rams are going to win, 10 games, 11 games, 12 games?
I mean, people think they're going to win 13, right? Isn't this the greatest team ever assembled with that defensive line and their
offense? The rest of the NFC West all lost, right? The Arizona loses badly. San Francisco and Garoppolo is human. He bleeds. He throws three picks and looks bad. And the Seahawks go to Denver, and even though Case Keenum threw you three, you couldn't find a way to win, and he gave up 500 yards. I think the consensus out there is this is going to be the Rams and everybody else. And the Rams are simply too fast, too loaded. All those players on one-year mercenary deals, like Marcus Peters last night with a pick six, and Ndamukong Suh, and everybody
and a
else.
Nice tribute to Marshawn on the way into the end zone, for sure.
Yes, he did. That's his cousin, after all.
I know.
So he had to pull that one off.
Are the Rams that good?
The Rams are the fastest team I've seen in the NFL. I think I could say that very, very confidently. And they play very fast. And Jared Goff, and I think it was Tom Wassel last night that tweeted and said, I don't know if I've ever been more wrong on a guy. Could not play his rookie year.
Right. I'm with him on
that. And then all of a sudden now is really the guy that plays.
Stands up and makes nice plays, stands tall in the pocket, throws the ball where he wants to. Goff's been really good. I never imagined that would be the case.
Correct.
After watching him in college and then watching him his rookie years, like, no chance.
Yep.
No chance this guy's actually a great quarterback.
Nope.
I don't know whether he's great yet, but he's certainly a good one, right? And if he can be consistent and just kind of play within the structure of that offense, he doesn't need to be incredible. They've got enough weapons and a great defense.
They're violent and they're fast. And the only way the Seahawks are going to compete with them this year, Mike, is if they get back to their play at the line of scrimmage being a lot better. Mm. Because you saw, again, last night as they wear you down. Yeah. It was 13-10. It was tied up, and they just ran away from. Guess what elite teams in the NFL do? Guess what the Seahawks did in 2012 and 2013 and 2014? They finish. Remember that word? They finish, and that's what the Rams did in finishing off the opening weekend.
Need to know the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
All right, well, biggest news here in Seattle on the injury front. Doug Baldwin apparently has a grade 2 MCL tear in his right knee, according to Adam Schefter. An MCL tear is the same as a sprain. Sprain is a tear, and a tear is a sprain. Baldwin's likely to miss a week or two at least. In theory, I guess it could end up being 3 or 4. It's not good news. I mean, it could have been a lot worse. This could be a season-ending injury for Doug Baldwin, but now he's got a problem with both of his knees. So if and when he comes back, and I'm sure Doug, as Pete's mentioned, everybody else knows, a tough dude, he'll come back.
Yep.
He's going to be playing with an injury to both of his knees. He is their best weapon on the outside and offense. That's not a great combination for a team that is not exactly loaded at the wide receiver position to begin with. And really needs this offense to step up with a defense that is not what it once was.
Yeah, I would agree with you. The Seahawks, one of the rare teams in the NFL, week number one that went into the season banged up. The team that they played had all 53 guys on their roster practice in pads during the week leading up to that game. And, yeah, they were healthier, and Denver was faster, and they were at home, and they took advantage of it. The Seahawks were down DJ Fluker. The Seahawks were down KJ Wright. The Seahawks are down Doug Baldwin in the first quarter and now going to be for a couple games. This is an MCL injury, very similar to what Russell Wilson had a couple years ago. But when you're quarterback, you can brace it up and you can play. This is very similar to Aaron Rodgers, I'm sure, when all the diagnosis comes out and what he had on Sunday night. Quarterbacks can just kind of put the brace on and go out there and play very hard for someone like Doug playing his position, where quickness and speed and trusting those legs is absolutely key to their success. Yeah, real bummer you're going to miss him for at least a week, maybe two.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Interesting conversation with Pete Carroll yesterday as we sat down with him for our regular 9:30 Monday morning interview. We're going to play you a lot of sound from this coming up in about 15, 20 minutes or so at 7:30. I thought Pete was in a good place. He seemed pretty well at ease with what had happened. He was positive without making it seem over the top. I didn't get the sense that he was, walking whistling past the graveyard or anything like that. I think he actually took a lot of positive out of that game. He had understood some of the problems that they had, and the need for development and coaching in this program is going to be a little bit more so this year than it has been in a while. But my biggest takeaway from actually being there with Pete was that he was in a pretty good place.
Pretty calm, cool, and collected.
Yeah.
In his shorts and t-shirts.
He's also wearing, to be fair, he was wearing shorts, khaki shorts, a faded t-shirt, and a chambray, long-sleeve opened button-down. I don't think there's another coach, maybe in the world, but certainly in the NFL, who wears that. I love it.
Yeah, I think what you felt yesterday is a little bit of a carryover of what we felt through the preseason. And this is simple, but this is certainly not true in a lot of places. Pete likes this team. He really likes this group of guys, and why wouldn't he? After fleshing out a lot of the agenda, the self-promotion and everything else, this is a group that listens, and I think listens very intently and aims to please what the coach wants them to do, and I think because of that, he really likes it. Now, can they do what he wants them? Can they win the line of scrimmage? Can they develop and stop giving up enormous big plays? That will be the challenge, but I think that was the feeling that I certainly felt in the preseason being around him. Felt it again yesterday. Man, he just really likes these guys. He roots for these guys. But there's a lot of development to be had.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
A week one of the NFL season now officially in the books with a Monday Night Football doubleheader concluding last night. The Jets win it 48-17. They had 48 points at the end of the third quarter, right around the beginning of the fourth. They just completely decimated the Lions, who were awful on offense, struggled on defense. Sam Darnold, after a pick six, played pretty well. Meanwhile, the Rams take apart the Raiders 33-13 in a game that was closer than that for most of three quarters before the Rams pulled away late. They were good. Mm-hmm. They're a good team. I don't know if they're the world beater that everybody thinks they're going to be, but they're certainly a really good football team that doesn't have a lot of weaknesses.
Yeah, the Jets, Jets may have had the most impressive win of anybody in the league. Going on the road against a playoff-worthy roster. Certainly Matthew Stafford, one of his worst days with four picks and a fumble, and largely gave that game away. But give credit in every phase of the game. The Jets offensively, defensively, special teams, and I'll put them on that list. You know, if anything jumped out to me in the NFL, in particular about the Rams, it is just this need for speed. Mm. The college game is getting smaller. The college game is getting faster in every single way. And you're starting to see the NFL more and more, and some of these programs really play to that and play to that tempo and play to that speed. And the Jets pretty loaded in every phase of the game and took it to Detroit last night.
All right, there you go. There's three things you need to know every morning at 7:10. A couple of text messages. Brock, the Rams are not faster than the Chiefs. No way.
Yeah, the Chiefs probably faster. That's fair. Yeah, I mean, that one guy in particular is about as sick as it gets, and Patrick Mahomes loves to play up-tempo. Mm. So, yeah, man, that's another team you just put on there. There's a bunch of them that are taking more of those college principles and playing at rapid speed.
The other one is the Jets winning. I talked to someone recently who said that Jeremy Bates, who's now calling plays for the Jets, was the best play caller that the Seahawks have ever had.
Wow.
And I was like, well, really? Isn't he? I couldn't really remember. I was like, isn't he just the third down fade guy? The guy who, like, chuck it up deep on third down? They're like, yeah, he did do that a couple of times, but overall he was the best play caller. He masterminded the win over the Saints in the playoffs, and that he was actually like a really great play caller. And I don't remember that, but he certainly looked pretty good last night. Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, week one's totally in the books. Are the Rams everything they were cracked up to be?
Not really. I mean, I think you can overreact, but they're really good. I think there's no question about it. You can see that the first half was just kind of a wash tie game. Both teams really have not been on the field for much of the preseason, a little bit flat. And then, you know, you can overreact to how dominant it was in the second half. But I think basically the Raiders just defense just ran out of steam. And so they were totally taken advantage of. And, once you get a roll going with the Rams offense, then it's all over. So I think you can overreact to it, but they're really, really good.
You know, JC, I heard Bob yesterday, Bob Graz and Tom, and great to have the Graz back in the building yesterday. And Bob kind of used the narrative that everybody is seemingly said, oh, week one, this is such a bad product, such a bad product. I don't know. I didn't feel that way this season nearly as much as I did the last couple years. You?
No, it's not a bad product. I mean, look at the things that you saw over the weekend. I mean, you saw greatness from Khalil Mack. You saw greatness from the comeback of Aaron Rodgers. You saw some close games. You saw some good finishes. All those different things I think were positive. I mean, but still, you see a little bit of a residue of the fact that you don't have enough time to train in training camp and guys aren't really totally in football shape. I mean, it's still, you can have good football even though what you're pretty much looking at is the equivalent of a third preseason game, I think, where the teams are as far as preparation and where they are as conditioning and all those different things. But no, I think it was still a very good start to the season because what you saw was some things you didn't expect. You didn't expect Ryan Fitzpatrick to throw for 417 yards and put up 48 points on the Saints. You didn't expect to see Sam Darnold come out as the youngest quarterback starting since the merger and putting up good numbers on Detroit. So you saw a lot of good things, but still you saw some things that need at least time to develop.
We saw a pile run into Doug Baldwin's right knee very early in that game Sunday in Denver, a grade 2 MCL tear. What does that mean?
I'd say it's probably 2 to 4 weeks. It was grade 3, it'd be 4 to 6. And so, the upside would be maybe 2. I mean, it probably more than likely could take a month. But, knowing the way this team kind of responds to injuries, you always take the under so many times. But I think the time frame was pretty much a 2 to 4 week injury.
And what does it look like without him?
It certainly diminishes things because what you can see, it takes away a lot of the interior type of routes inside the numbers that Doug Baldwin's so good at. I mean, Tyler Lockett can try it. I mean, they can try it with Brandon Marshall, but they can't do it as efficiently as Doug can. And so for a quarterback that likes to place the ball nicely in the middle of the field and, kind of set up behind the offensive line because, he's 5'10 and 5'8, so he can't necessarily see anything. The positioning that Doug can get is so important to get the completions. And when you look league-wide, I mean, the times that he throws to Doug, Russell Wilson throws to Doug Baldwin, there's one of the highest percentages of success.
What about, is there any chance to either go out and, I mean, we've got a bunch of text messages suggesting Dez Bryant. I can't imagine that's going to happen. But what about even just calling up a Keenan Reynolds from the practice squad and moving on from one of the guys near the back end of the roster? Do you think it'll require a roster move?
Oh, it has to. No question, because they went into the season with only 5 wide receivers, and so now you're down to 4. So something has to give, whether it's going to be Keenan Reynolds or somebody else. And I think it very well could be Keenan Reynolds. You notice that Stringfellow is still available. He went over to the Tennessee practice squad and then got cut, but he's not been re-signed. And you figure there's going to be a whole bunch of roster moves today. Not a bunch, but there'll be some. But I would have to think to Keenan Reynolds, because the one thing that he does offer is there's a little bit of the same thing that Doug has.
He's Doug. He looks just like him.
Looks just like him.
It's crazy.
Former quarterback. He knows how to position himself. And so, no, I think that Keenan is probably the leading candidate to come on the active roster. But somebody has to give, because they only have four healthy receivers now.
I heard some people calling them new Doug and old Doug during training camp this year. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of what he looks like when you see him out there. What do you think? A couple of ex-Seahawks out there. How did Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman, and Marshawn Lynch look in week one?
Well, I mean, I was just trying to see if the stats came up yet, and they have not for attempts in that thrown on him.
They just did. They just came in.
There
right
you
now.
Go. No, they didn't. Stat update.
Stats and info just hit.
Yeah, they did not come in yet. So, but, I mean, Bennett was kind of, got one, I think, one tackle for loss, so it wasn't great. He's only out there for about maybe 40 plays. Sherman accounted for himself. The fact that he was out there for, 71 plays, I thought was very important. That's good. And then who is the third one?
Marshawn. What do you think of Marshawn?
It's okay. I mean, he made some power runs, and that's what he does so well. But the question is going to be sustainability, because, again, it's like everything vanished for the Raiders offensively and defensively in the second half.
Do you feel this league's just getting faster, JC?
Oh,
you're
yeah.
getting on the sidelines, and it just – man, it was fast 20 years ago. People just don't know, unless they've got your vantage point on the sidelines, how quickly that game just moves.
Oh, no question. And I think you can see more teams. I mean, look, for example, Arizona. I think their base defense was three safeties, because they want more speed out there. And I think that you can see, particularly on defense, you have to match the speed of the offense with the speed of the defense. And so, I think everybody's looking for faster ways to come in. And, I mean, you look at, again, we know there's a lot of problems right now that have to be worked on the Seahawks defense, but look how much faster they are. I mean, they're faster strong side linebacker with Barkevious Mingo. They've got fast cornerbacks. Maybe Trey Flowers isn't going to win the race, but he's real good. And so, no, I think this league is getting faster and faster and faster.
Wild card time.
Time now for the wild card. Wild
card. Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
If we were to put together a recreational flag football team, what position could we put you at?
Let's see. You would want me probably in more of a reactionary position, because I don't think you want to take advantage of my athletic skills. So I wouldn't be in the skilled set at, say, running back or wide receiver. I think I'd drop back and be more of the cornerback, just trying to see if I can get
around.
The technique out there and be able to do that.
Can you do the step kick?
Well, I can't, no. I mean,
can you do the kick step?
I can't do the kick step or the step kick or anything else. I mean, I guess the one thing I can do, they have a stat that's called burn defenders. I could be the burn defender.
What do you think is the most athletic thing you'd do?
What's that? Most athletic thing, yes. I do? Try to avoid getting hit when you have a play on the sidelines and you have everybody coming
you
over.
Go.
Four to five yards.
How close have you been?
Let's see. In the Minnesota game, one of the Minnesota tight ends hit my foot.
Oh, okay.
But that wasn't too bad. He was a backup tight end.
So, like,
he had injury.
Do you do any, work on that? A little get-back drill? Do you do that in your living room there or anything?
No. I'm too busy in the database.
I got it.
All right. John, have a great rest of your day.
Okay. There you go.
John Clayton with us every morning at 7:15. I'm so glad to hear another question from Brock about John's athleticism. Yep. They never get old.
No, never.
Never.
And he gave you a good answer this time.
Just keep asking. That was
you thought he was going to get a terrible answer. Nope, he didn't.
That was the first time in probably 2 years that question has gotten a good answer. So, good job. I appreciate that.
You bet.
That was great. Let's keep doing that.
Way to go, Jim.
Speaking of good answers, we got some good ones from Pete yesterday. I want to play you a few of the most important. Don't go anywhere. It's next on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
All right, it's Brock and Salk here, 710 ESPN Seattle. If you're watching on the video stream at 710sports.com or on the app, you can see Kyle Brown,
dang, dude, kinda like
producer
this.
Extraordinaire, waving to the camera. He's in here due to some computer issues in the other room. What's up, dude? Kyle here in the building?
Oh, he don't want no mic on him?
No.
Look at him.
Get that mic away. No, he's running away.
He
only feels comfortable on his mic. Oh, my God, he's sprinting.
Yeah.
Good burst.
He's out.
Real good burst there.
I want to sit in here.
Real good burst.
He knows
burst.
What happened to Roger when Roger was sitting in that seat.
That's true. He could feel the bad vibes.
Yes.
Hey, Pete Carroll's show yesterday, Brock. I want to run through a couple of the most important things from it. Before I do it, let me remind you, every week this year, we give away a pair of tickets to every Seahawks home game. We'll do it. We do the Pete Carroll show Mondays at 9:30. And then later that day, there was a video made yesterday. Taylor did a great job with some of the highlights of our conversation with the coach. And that is up at 710sports.com/win. So go there, watch that video, and you can become eligible then to win these tickets. You can also gain more entries by doing things like visiting our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram pages, downloading the app I just mentioned, the 710 ESPN Seattle app, or things like that. So once you've done it, once you've increased all your chances to win, listen tomorrow, as you normally would, at 8:15. We do this every Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And we're going to pick a random name of all the people who've entered the contest and announce them as a winner. That person will have 5 minutes to call in, redeem your prize. Watch that video at 710sports.com/win. Listen tomorrow at 8:15, and then call in and win. Pretty
Love
simple.
It.
Pretty easy, right?
I just did it.
You just watched.
Yeah, I'm
wow. Even while I was talking. That's amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
You're a force.
Try.
All right. Pete Carroll yesterday, and let me, Kyle, are you working? Are you up and operational?
I'm going to play this stuff manually.
Oh. I don't even know what manually means.
That means he's going to actually just recreate the sounds.
When we asked Pete Carroll, what did he say? And then Kyle's just going to, you're going to imitate
him? We didn't run the ball enough.
good job. All right. Let's, we'll get to the running game in a minute. Let's start with Earl Thomas, who played for the first time. My question for Pete was basically, was he surprised to see Earl out there after, or at least when he walked into the building, what was it all like?
Earl had a good week of practice. We didn't see a lot from him. We couldn't see a ton of it, but that's why we had to try and spot him in the game some. We probably played him more than we thought. We planned to play him less than that, but he was going fine. He felt it, and everything was working out. So he may be the shortest guy in Seattle today, you know, after taking the hits and all that.
How did Earl play?
Gosh, he's hard to judge, man, and that is why safeties aren't paid in this league. And I apologize to not give you, like, this great answer of, oh, he played great. Oh, he played really good. Oh, he played terrible. But honestly, you want to know why a safety market's a little bit soft? Do you want to know why those guys aren't commanding the kind of dollars that many of their peers do? Because it's difficult to gauge and judge. You know, you can do your assignments and play pretty sound and get through it and just not really notice. And you know what typically that job gets? League minimum, right? Do your job. And if you do it a little bit better, maybe make a little bit more, but you're not making 13 to 15 million bucks a year. He had a beautiful pick. All right. They run verticals. And I have no idea other than Case Keenum was jacked up in the mile high air and thought he could fit that one in there. You're not fitting that throw that late into any receiver at the seam there, and Earl took advantage of it. Outside of that, you know, I think he jumped a few other routes, took some risk, and that didn't necessarily pay off, and he was pretty solid everywhere else. But did he differentiate other than the pick from Tedrick Thompson? Could you tell the difference when he was in there?
I know that when he came out, the Broncos went down and scored.
Yes. And was that all Tedrick? Absolutely, positively not.
I think it was.
So, okay.
I'm going to blame T2 entirely for the whole possession. We followed up, though, because Earl's comments after the game were maybe just as interesting as him playing, as Earl, still wants to get paid, and Pete responded.
What do you make of where Earl is at mentally and emotionally right now?
I just told you, he was great. He was great. He was his competitive self. He worked really hard. He responded with players, and the players responded with him. He went right back into who he has always been. He's been a great battler, competitor, and he went out and played like crazy. Played really well.
I just told you, son. Why you gotta ask that again? Didn't you hear me, Titus? Didn't you just hear me? I just told you, son, for the second time, for the third time, for the fourth time. That was the only time I think some of you felt some of the emotion from
Pete. I just told you. He was great.
I just told you. Okay. And that was also, I think, followed. Those questions followed, though, after we brought up the SI article.
Right.
Right? And where he also said, I'm just tired of this stuff. Right? I'm just tired of rehashing some of this stuff. I'm tired that writers, and even more so former players, can't just move past this. So he was not going to dive into any of Earl's commentary about protecting himself. And I really hope that Coach Carroll, and more importantly, Ken Norton, has the juice to say, Earl, if we ever see this on the field, you will not play, right? If you ever, this is what we ridded this program of, okay? This is why we hit the reset and we turned it, because we have to have just total all-in from everybody.
I was listening to Bob Gross and Tom yesterday, and they parsed Earl a little bit differently. Like, they were not confident that Earl was saying he might make some business decisions to protect his health. They got the sound. Do you have that sound from yesterday? I'm sorry, Kyle. I'm sorry to do it to you like that. But do you have the sound of Earl from yesterday
from
the post game saying that that he would need to make decisions in order to protect himself and his health?
All I can do is just put the best product out there as possible, protect myself until I do get paid.
They I guess I added the words his health. They didn't hear protect myself until I get paid as maybe protect my health. They heard it as, yeah, I got to do everything I can to keep doing what I'm doing until I get paid. I don't hear it that way. I hear much more of a like, hey, there might be some situations where I don't play the way I always do until I get paid.
I'm sorry. All I know is that everything he has ever said from the Pro Bowl on is about being disrespected. And I know myself, and I can't play unless I get my respect, and
he went out and did.
Around one
But he went out and did. He went out and did play. And so the question is, how different was he? Mm-hmm. We also asked Pete about, of course, the SI story and what its effect might have been on Russell Wilson.
I think it was harder than it needed to be, but he was fine. He was fine. I thought his statement that he wrote and it showed how classy he is and how up above the fray he is, and he was fine about it. But he's human, you don't want people talking about you like that, and whatever. And I thought he handled it really well, and he's as good as you can get at doing it. But he's a human too.
That's a startling revelation, Brock.
Who's talking about you?
No, that he's human.
Oh.
I don't know that anyone was fully sure of that until Pete finally said it here on the Pete Carroll Show.
I don't know. I still feel like there's a ruse going on here.
I do, too.
I'm not sure.
I'm not totally sure I believe him.
He's got to prove it first.
Right?
I'm not just going to take somebody's
word. Who was talking about you?
Maybe he's human, maybe not. I mean, he's...
Cyborg, I'd buy.
Right.
But...
Robot, maybe. Human? Come on. He has to be human. I'm sorry, you can't tell me that story didn't bother him a little bit. And I'm not saying it necessarily affected the way he played on Sunday, but it had to bother him. It bothered him enough that for the first time he responded.
Well, I think clearly he knows there's still a couple guys on this team. They haven't totally reset everything. I think there's a few guys on this team and one that has a grade 2 MCL tear that has been a little bit on that side of judgment.
Absolutely.
You know?
And so that's Russell's reaction. What about Pete's?
I'm disappointed that guys can't move on, and get going. Writers as well as... people contributing to the writing, but that's behind us and I don't care about it.
And I don't think he really cares.
Well, I think he does. And I'm not sure it's 100% behind
writers.
Him.
Right. Great Bishop.
It's behind him, but not entirely behind
him. I like how Lydia's shoulders just squinch up right there when stuff gets uncomfortable.
What's uncomfortable?
Like when you can hear the disdain dripping in his voice.
Right.
Writers.
I don't know. I didn't hear it, though. I heard it as a little of both. I'm mad at everybody. I'm mad at everyone for dragging this up, whether it's the writers or the ex-players. Everybody just move on.
Right.
Asking me about this.
But at the same time, it sounds like it's in his head a little bit when he's talking about Russell Wilson.
There was chances. I think there's a lot going on. I'm not trying to cover for him at all. I think it was a hard game. Right off the bat, we got hammered.
I'm not trying to cover for him or anything. I'm going to make sure he's held accountable.
I mean, I'm not going out of my way to make excuses for the guy. I hold him to the same standard as everyone else. I don't know why you'd ask me if I don't.
I mean, I got to recognize that he made a bunch of really big mistakes, but I don't want to make excuses like I always have for him. So,
stop it. That is ridiculous. He has not always made excuses for Russell. And that's why I think that this whole thing is sort of bunk, because I've heard Pete say things like that a million times. How many times has Pete been Russell can do better?
Hold on a second. How many excuses? If push comes to shove, what is hilarious about this, and I don't know if it is irony or not, okay? Danny O'Neill can correct me. But who has Pete made the most excuses for in the history of his time in Seattle?
Richard Sherman.
One guy and one guy
not
alone.
Close.
Who was the entire source part of that article?
Richard Sherman. It's not close. I mean, it's by a landslide. Hey, let's just speaking of excuses. Last thing from Pete, and then we'll move on here. Was about the running game. I don't know whether you would call this an excuse, but certainly I think it's an answer that could be better.
What went wrong in the running game?
We didn't do it enough. We didn't do it enough. And that goes back to, I'll always tell you, that goes back to we didn't convert on third down, so then you're off the field and you don't get to use the ready list that you had. We didn't get through it. We ran the ball 6 times in the first half. We had, how many plays? We had 16 plays?
16 runs, I believe. Right?
Yeah, but I think there was
15 in the first half.
15
like
plays in the first half. Yeah. That's not enough to even, you can't figure it out.
So I can appreciate that, but I got to follow up and say, why come out and throw the ball twice to start the game? Why 3rd and inches? Is it a passing play? I mean, there were some other opportunities to run the ball, right?
Yeah. Well, Yes, yes and yes and yes, all of that.
Oh, I thought you said get your name out of my mouth. I thought that drop was going to be falling in right there. Well done.
Yes and yes and yes, all of that.
And by the way, look around the league. And I'll do a little number crunching here before 8 o'clock. Look around the league. Look at the disparity between runs.
I don't care.
No, you know who didn't run enough? Oakland didn't run enough. You know who didn't run enough? The Detroit Lions didn't run enough.
I don't care about that.
You don't stay on the field.
I don't care about that. You say you want to run the ball, run the ball. This is not hard. I don't care about Detroit or anybody else. If you say you want to run the ball on first and second down sometimes. Run the ball on third and inches. Or don't say it. This is very simple.
Mike, they're trying to create an aggressive mindset.
Okay.
Just like you did with your voice raising right there. Well done.
Don't yell. Don't you try to bring the Detroit Lions into this. This isn't about them.
Brock, you're always trying
to bring the Lions into it. And it's not about them. This is about the Seahawks, not the Lions. Go do radio in Detroit. All right, Coors Light's Blue 42 is coming up next. The rookie quarterback class, some of them made their debut. Who was better? Who was best? It's next on Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
All right, time for three good football questions with Brock. We do this every day. We call Coors Light's Blue 42. You can get a little good football information here. Let's start here, Brock. Rookie class of quarterbacks. I've always sort of believed that this group was going to be iffy at best, but they got a couple opportunities for some guys to succeed. What did you think of them in week one, the guys who played?
Yeah, you didn't like this rookie class at all. You wouldn't have drafted any of them in the first round. I said I would have.
Certainly not in the top five.
Yeah. And there's only one rookie that started this opening weekend. And actually, he went to the deepest QB room of any of them. And I think it speaks to why he found early success. He was better than McCown and Bridgewater, or certainly projected to have that upside. Sam Darnold, the youngest quarterback to ever start a game, week number one since the merger. Yeah, he was throwing some dimes last night.
Four receivers. Back to throw is Darnold. Looks left. Has time. Looks over the middle. Fires one down the left sideline. Towards the end zone. Robbie Anderson. He's got it. That's a jet touchdown. Robbie Anderson. A rifle throw from Sam Darnold.
Here's why I liked Sam so much at USC. Everybody loved him there. Reminded me of Deshaun Watson at Clemson. Everybody loved him, just wanted to be around him. He just makes people better. And you felt that immediately with the New York Jets. Secondly, USC was not very good. USC wasn't. There's a lot of hype around USC and, oh my gosh, all this talent in these recruiting classes. When you saw him up close and personal as I did, you realized this guy elevated everybody. And without him, they'd have been a 4-5 loss team. With him, guess what? They win a Rose Bowl game and they go to the Cotton Bowl. Kid's got some pretty good juice. He's creative on third down. He was phenomenal on third down last night to really keep that game going until they could really take advantage of Stafford's mistakes. I like Sam Darnold an awful lot, and he proved it last night.
All right, question number two. They had a stat last night, I don't know, late in the first half, that showed that the Raiders were getting the ball out in an average of 2.2 seconds per passing play. That the league average last year was 2.7. The Raiders yesterday, at least in the first half, was 2.2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Stay away from Donald and Brockers and the rest of that pass rush.
Dominican Sue,
et cetera. Can the Seahawks do that, and should they do that?
They should,
especially against
the
Rams.
I think you should do that. That should absolutely be part of your mix, but you just can't live on it because it limits them what you do. So Jared Cook has 180 yards. Great, right? They're tight ends. You know, so you're going to throw to tight ends. You're going to throw to backs. You're going to get stuff out of your hands very quickly, but you obviously shorten the field. Receivers can't take chunk plays. It allows that defense eventually to sit on some of those things, and then what happened? Oh, I'm going to sit on this little running back route here, and it's going to be a pick six the other way. So I think any time you just say, wow, we have to do this. My first start in the NFL was against the Carolina Panthers and a guy by the name of Reggie White, and Mike Holmgren still had nightmares, right? About Reggie White and what he could do to people. And so we changed the whole thing. Well, we're going to slide this protection to Reggie. Yeah, the dude's played 16 years. Doesn't matter. We're going to slide to him. We're going to slide to him. We're going to slide to him. We're going to get the ball out. We're going to get the ball out. We're going to get the ball out. And you just become one-dimensional, and I don't think that's ever healthy offensively. You want to threaten a defense every single play. Like a pitcher, you don't want them to ever know what's coming your way. Mix it in, absolutely. But I thought last night the Rams caught on to that and took advantage of it late.
All right, question number three. Pete mentioned two gimmies that they gave the Broncos on defense. What happened in those plays? What were they, and can they be prevented?
Yeah, cannot happen in the NFL. Can't happen. The first one was there between Trey Flowers and Shaquem Griffin.
The Lindsay touchdown?
Yeah, and based on the look of it, I think that really fell on Shaquem to get outside of it. It was a man concept. Now, sometimes they pass those things off with different combination routes, so I just hate to lay all the blame at 49 without knowing how some things can tweak and change with motion and formation. But that just a flat route for a 40-yard touchdown in the league, that just can't – I mean, that can never happen. That's way too easy. That is a gimme. That's a lay-in that you just don't play defense. That you just, like, clear out and somebody doesn't rotate and we're just going to give up lay-ins. Not in this league. That can't happen. The other one was a play. It was just that in-cut to the receiver, and Trey Flowers is trailing, thinking he has inside help. Either linebackers are going to drop or Earl Thomas is going to be there. Are you going to give up 15-yard in routes in this system? Yes. Did Richard Sherman do it? Even Richard Sherman gave that up. It then cannot turn into 40-yard touchdowns.
You hear Wyman talk about that play yesterday? He was breaking down what might have happened in their whodunit segment.
Uh-huh.
And Dave's always really, really careful not to lay blame at any one person without knowing the scheme and saying, hey, look, you just don't know what you don't know about these plays.
Yes.
But if he had to guess, he actually thought that might have been on Justin Coleman.
Could have been. The nickel just running and not, you know, not staying and honoring
the way that the way Trey Flowers was chasing after him, this is according to Wyman yesterday.
Thought he had help inside.
Yeah, it was not the way you would chase after somebody that had beat you.
Correct.
It was that he had essentially collapsed his third of the field.
Yes.
Because there were no other receivers.
I will say this, and you saw it in the preseason too, and it really is maybe one of the areas more than any that stands out from what you had. You just had a group that played so cohesively for so many years, you never saw space, right? You saw completions.
Except for the last couple of years, you did.
You saw completions.
Except in the last year or two, you started.
In the last year or two, yes, when those guys slowed down and when they
really
moved on.
But that's really important to say.
Oh, for sure. But 2012, 2013, 2014, those years, like when they were the number one scoring defense, man, that space, they just swallowed it up. They absorbed it. And unfortunately, this preseason in week one, there was a whole lot of windows for Case Keenum to throw into.
All right, that's Coors Light's Blue 42. As far as the other rookie quarterbacks, we did see Josh Allen make his debut late in the game after Peterman was just awful.
Yeah, Lydia's shoulders just shrugged again. Like,
he was not good. It can't be long before we see Josh Rosen.
Correct.
Based on how the Cardinals looked and how...
And Baker Mayfield, we'll see. They got a good defense, man. There's some pieces there in Cleveland.
Tyrod's such an interesting player. It's so hard to judge him. He does some cool things. He makes some mistakes. So, I think eventually we'll end up seeing Baker Mayfield. Coaches can't help themselves, man.
Yep.
They just generally can't help themselves but to play their guys. So, all right, hey, we're going to open up the lines here, 206-421-3776. Brock and I have like a million things we think we learned in week one, whether it be about the Seahawks or about the NFL in general. And we want to include you guys in the process. So give us one thing you learned this weekend. 206-421-3776. One thing you learned about the Seahawks or one thing you learned about the NFL. We certainly have a big list, but we want yours as well. 206-421-3776. Give you some things we learned next on Brock and Salk.